Compass Media Networks. This is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Ryan could be a yes. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Kashenka. It's Wednesday, October 21st. Welcome aboard. Here's what we have for you this hour.
Paul Ryan, the Wisconsin congressman and former vice presidential candidate, says he's open to running for House Speaker under certain conditions. Hear what they are.
A New York City police officer has become the fourth city cop killed in the line of duty by gunfire in the past year. We'll have details on the call he responded to.
In sports, the Mets and Royals are each one win away from the World Series. Both could advance today.
And presidential candidate Jim Webb has dropped out of the Democratic primary.
He dropped out, but he dropped out of the Democratic race. He kept it relatively open. He said he was going to see what voters had to say about whether he would continue to soldier on as an independent. Jim Webb has had difficulty gaining really any sort of traction in the polls.
Molly O'Toole at Defense One on why Mr. Webb's national security credentials didn't resonate with voters. She's here in about 25 minutes. A New York City police officer is dead after responding to a call about an armed robbery in the East Harlem section of Manhattan. Police Commissioner Bill Bratton identified the murdered officer as 33-year-old Randolph Holder, a 5-year veteran of the force. He was assigned to the Housing Bureau, which polices the city's public housing developments.
Four police officers murdered in 11 months. That's about as bad as it gets. And we lost six in the line of duty, but four murdered in the line of duty.
Authorities say when Mr. Holder and his partner responded to a report of shots fired, they encountered another man who told them an assailant had stolen his bicycle at gunpoint. The officers confronted the suspect and pursued him. Not long after, gunfire rang out. Mr. Holder was reportedly shot in the head and died at around 10:30 last night, Eastern Time. The suspect, who has not been named yet, was wounded in the shootout and arrested. So far this year, by the way, 101 police officers have died in the line of duty in the U.S., 33 of them apparently by gunfire. Big development on Capitol Hill. Wisconsin Congressman Paul Ryan, the former vice presidential candidate, has told colleagues that he'd run for Speaker of the House if he gets broad support from all wings of the party. Current House Speaker John Boehner is stepping down at the end of the month. Mr. Ryan is giving fellow lawmakers until Friday to determine if he has full support.
If my colleagues entrust me to be the Speaker, I want us to become the solution.
More now from Paul Singer, Washington correspondent at USA Today. He joins us on the T-Mobile hotline. Paul, set this up.
Paul Ryan was seen as the candidate who really could draw broad support from across the fractious Republican Party in the House. But he was really hesitant to do it. He said he didn't want to get into a spitting match with various parts of the party. And frankly, he said he was very committed to his young family. He's got children, and he didn't want to spend all that time away from them. But he said that he is willing to do it. Now he's come to the conclusion that he doesn't want to someday have his children say, you know, how come when given the opportunity to stand up and serve the country, did you not do so when you could have made a difference? Yeah,
right.
Interesting approach, you know?
Wow.
And he also said he's willing to do it only if the party is willing to unite behind him. He's not going to stand for a big floor fight.
All right. So, but on a related note, you know, and I thought, oh, yeah, okay, Paul Ryan is the guy who could unite things. And I thought I saw a comment from somebody from the House Freedom Caucus who says, we are not going to be told who the guy is who's going to be the uniter. And I thought, geez, are they not happy with this either?
Well, you know, they have two issues. One is that there are a bunch of conservatives who still believe that Paul Ryan is not conservative enough for them.
Okay.
They have mounted some very serious concerns about his, for instance, immigration policies. There's, in fact, a Fire Paul Ryan website up already. So there are some ideological issues out there. The second thing for the Freedom Caucus group, the most conservative group, has been all along that it's really more about rules change than anything else. They want the right to get their bills on the floor. They want more power for chairmen of committees. They basically want to reduce the centralized authority of the Speaker to let them have more say. Now, I believe that Ryan's going to be open to some of that, but not all of it. He made it very clear that, you know, I'm not going to be Speaker if we're going to have these constant leadership challenges in a sort of nonstop state of crisis. I believe he said in the conference room that he would be willing to take arrows from the front, but not from the back. And so that's where the negotiation is going to come in the next few days. I honestly would be surprised if the Freedom Caucus digs in its heels and says, no, we're not going to accept Paul Ryan. I just don't think at this point there's a whole lot of other options, and they've already proven they're a serious force to be reckoned with.
Got it. We're speaking with Paul Singer, USA Today, Washington correspondent, about Wisconsin Congressman Paul Ryan now saying he's open to running for Speaker. All right, so how about on the Democratic side here, Paul? Are they slapping their forehead saying, you've got to be kidding me, this is worse than Boehner? Or
no,
better than Boehner?
No, like, I mean, the Democrats, in fact, at some point this afternoon, Harry Reid took the microphone and said, oh, I like Paul Ryan. I think we can work with him, which people sort of took as an attempt to torpedo Paul Ryan's campaign.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, well, no one's going to vote for him now. But no, I mean, I think, you know, Paul Ryan is a credible person in the Democratic caucus. I think they think he's a serious guy and somebody who they can work with. I think part of the concern all along from the Democratic side is, you know, how much unruliness will the next speaker allow? And if it's going to become kind of a free-for-all where everybody can bring whatever measure they want to the floor and demand a vote and 50 or 60 votes to, I don't know, you know, defund Planned Parenthood, whatever, that the Democrats think, well, these bills aren't going anywhere. What's the point? That's the thing they're most concerned about. And I think, obviously, the biggest concern is, are we going to get a debt ceiling increase sometime in the next 10 days or so?
Yeah. All right. What about White House aspirations for Mr. Ryan, though? That it seems like it's, you know, running for that position from the position of Speaker of the House is not good.
Yes. Not good, I think, is exactly the description I would use. Not good. I mean, one of the theories here has been all along that the reason that Paul Ryan didn't want to run for Speaker was, A, he's got a bunch of young kids at home, a couple of young kids at home, and he didn't want to leave them.
Yeah.
And B, if the kids mature over the next 6-7 years and grow up, then he can run for president when they're teenagers, and it's not a problem.
Hmm.
The issue is when you are Speaker, you are a very public face, but it is not necessarily the public face from which you can run for the White House. On the other hand, if he really can be a unifying force in the Republican Party, that is a pretty good resume.
Okay. Yeah.
To say to the party, choose me as your nominee. Look what I was able to do with the Looney Tunes in the House. I can bring all of our party together.
That's Paul Singer, Washington correspondent at USA Today. 14 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. You always want to look great, but don't have the time or the patience to go shopping. With Trunk Club, you never have to set foot in the mall again. Trunk Club takes the hassle out of shopping by shipping you a trunk of clothes that fit perfectly and make you look like $1 million with all the new fall styles. At trunkclub.com/morning, all you have to do is answer simple questions about your style, preferences, and size, and then you are assigned an expert stylist. They curate clothes from the best premium brands, and you approve what you like. Just like that, a trunk arrives on your doorstep filled with hand-picked clothes that are perfect for you. Try them on, keep what you like, and easily return what you don't in their prepaid trunk. This is not a subscription service. You only pay for the clothes you keep. No hidden charges, just great clothes. And right now, their entire styling service is free. Even the shipping. You only pay for the clothes you keep. To take advantage, go to trunkclub.com/morning. One more time, that's trunkclub.com/morning for a trunk filled with clothes you'll love wearing. Thanks for spending time with us on this Wednesday. Syrian President Bashar al-Assad has made an unannounced trip to Moscow today. It's his first known trip outside his country since the start of conflict there in March of 2011. Russia, as you know, is trying to prop up Mr. Assad during the conflict. The U.S. wants him out of power. Meanwhile, Russia and the U.S. have signed a Memorandum of Understanding that regulates all aircraft and drone flights over Syria. Pentagon Press Secretary Peter Cook.
We do not agree with the Russians on their strategy in Syria. At a minimum, we can agree with them on the safe operations of flights over Syria between our air crews and theirs.
He said it established safety protocols requiring the Russians and the U.S.-led international coalition fighting the Islamic State in Syria to maintain professional airmanship at all times, use specific communication frequencies, and establish a communication line on the ground. The coalition has been bombing Islamic State terrorist positions in Syria for a little more than a year, so American officials were alarmed when Russia began launching its own airstrikes in Syria on behalf of its ally 3 weeks ago. 20 minutes now after the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
President Paul Ryan is seeking unity in a place it's rarely found, telling House Republicans he'll serve as their speaker only if they embrace him by week's end as their consensus candidate.
What I told members is, if you can agree to these requests, and if I can truly be a unifying figure, then I will gladly serve.
It's a big if for a House GOP that's careened from one crisis to another in recent years. That includes a compromise-averse band of hardliners who forced a partial government shutdown 2 years ago, drove out the current House Speaker, and scared off his number two. That left Ryan to get dragged reluctantly into seeking a job he never wanted. A New York teenager whose brother died following a church beating is expected to testify at a hearing today to determine whether authorities can continue to hold their older sister, one of six church members accused in the attack. 19-year-old Lucas Leonard died after authorities say he and 17-year-old brother Christopher were beaten at the Word of Life Christian Church in upstate New York earlier this month. The boy's parents are also charged. Lamar Odom's family says he has taken a few steps since arriving in Los Angeles, part of what they describe as miraculous progress for the former NBA player. In a statement, the Odom family thanked doctors and nurses who cared for him at a Las Vegas hospital and asked supporters to keep praying for Odom, since his continued improvement will not be easy. The Cancer Society has revised its guidelines on mammograms, saying most women can start at age 45 and should have them every year until age 55 and then start having them every other year. The guidance doesn't match what's been suggested by other groups and is sure to raise more controversy. And elaborate new transmissions are helping automakers meet rising fuel economy standards, but they're also requiring more trips to the repair shop. Transmission problems tripped up Honda, Nissan, Jeep, and other brands in Consumer Reports' annual reliability survey. Lexus and Toyota, which rely on older transmissions in many of their models, were the best performing brands in the survey. Audi, Mazda, and Subaru round out the top five. The worst performers, Infiniti, Cadillac, Ram, Jeep, and Fiat.
Elaborate new transmissions. That stinks.
You know, it's getting a little complicated. Yeah, that things break down, they're not tested right yet.
And you know, the other thing is just a mild fender benders these days. Yeah. Are so expensive because of all the technology in the cars. It's unbelievable.
I know. That's why I kept mine so simple. The last car I bought, I don't want all those bells and whistles. Forget it.
Very smart. 23 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Time now for a retirement update, and it's brought to you by TIAA CREF. Learn more at TIAA.org. More penny pinching is in the works for tens of millions of retirees. Those receiving Social Security benefits will not get a raise this year. It's the third time in the last 6 years that benefits will stay flat. Janelle Marte, personal finance writer at the Washington Post, says this happens usually when inflation is low. The problem is many other costs are rising significantly faster than Social Security. Janelle, explain this.
When you look at the things that retirees actually have to pay for, you know, when you look at some housing costs and you look at Medicare, health care costs, that actually their costs have been rising and Social Security has not kept up with that. So we thought we would take a look at what specifically is getting more expensive for retirees.
All right, so what's on that list of things that are rising more quickly in Social Security?
All right. Well, one of the main things is health care. Now, if you look, Medicare Part B premiums have grown 131% between 2000 and 2015. You know, Medicare is not counted in that measure of CPI of inflation that's used to adjust Social Security benefits. So that's a big gap for retirees.
Wow. Why is that not measured?
It's just not a part of the consumer price index that's used. It's really for urban workers. You know, it does include things like gas and commuting costs, which, you know, some people point out when you're in retirement, you're not commuting as much. So that's one way that it's kind of a mismatch. But it just does not include Medicare premiums.
Wow. All right. So what are some of the other mismatches?
Let's take a look at housing. Monthly housing costs have increased 44% for people who own their home. It's even risen even faster, 56% for renters between 2000 and 2015. And the backdrop for this is that between those years, Social Security benefits grew by 43%. Mm. And this is all according to an analysis by the Senior Citizens League, which really watches this closely. So if you have to think, you know, benefits are growing by this much, but you have all of these expenses that are growing much more quickly.
Well, we're speaking with Janelle Marte, personal finance writer at the Washington Post. Her piece is called "The Retirement Costs That Are Rising Faster Than Social Security Benefits." And not that I'm one that advocates the government spending more money, but has anybody made the argument that maybe Social Security benefits should be calculated in a different way?
Certainly has been made before. I mean, but then you also have people who argue that some of the things that are rising and are counted by the index do not affect retirees, so that it all sort of may be balancing out. But, you know, of course, you have some groups that are still pointing out, no, benefits have only grown this much. If you look at where people are spending their money in retirement, there is a big mismatch.
Thanks, Janelle. Janelle Marte, personal finance writer at The Washington Post. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Getting your mailing and shipping done can seem like a no-win situation. First, going to the post office takes up valuable time, and leasing a postage meter is expensive with multi-year commitments and hidden fees. Luckily, there's a better way. Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package right from your desk using your own computer and printer. Even get special postage discounts you can't find at the post office. Plus, Stamps.com is more powerful than a postage meter at just a fraction of the cost. You can save at least 50% compared to a postage meter, and you'll avoid those time-consuming trips to the post office. Right now, sign up for Stamps.com and use my last name, Deal, for this special offer. A 4-week trial plus a $110 bonus offer, including postage and a digital scale. Don't wait. Go to Stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Deal. That's Stamps.com. Enter Deal.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday, October 21. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. A New York City cop shot and killed. New Mexico authorities say a 4-year-old girl was shot and killed during a road rage incident. Paul Ryan open to running for House Speaker. Senate Democrats block a bill that would have cut off funding for sanctuary cities. TMZ says Seahawks running back Fred Jackson crashed his Corvette into a planter box in a stop sign while racing a teammate. And what the Cubs might be doing wrong with their flags. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. Strike one off the list of presidential candidates. Former Virginia Senator Jim Webb has announced he's withdrawing from the Democratic primary. He says he's considering launching a campaign as an independent.
How I remain as a voice will depend on what kind of support I'm shown in the coming weeks as I meet with people from all sides of America's political landscape, and I intend to do that.
More now from Molly O'Toole, politics reporter at Defense One. Molly, what's his status?
So he dropped out, but he dropped out of the Democratic race. He kept it relatively open. He said he was going to see what voters had to say about whether he would continue to soldier on as an independent. Jim Webb has had difficulty gaining really any sort of traction in the polls, in the media, and we saw this in the debate for his campaign. Although he really, it should be noted that he has the most extensive military experience of anyone in either party who's running, who was running for president. In addition to that, he was a senator. He served on the Armed Services Committee, the Foreign Relations Committee. He was the Navy Secretary under Reagan. He held other positions in the Pentagon. So this isn't someone without experience when it comes to national security, when it comes to defense. But he was having a lot of trouble gaining traction.
Yeah. You know, my takeaway, having watched him in the debate, was that he looked uncomfortable. He looked a little stiff. But there was that one time where he said, I am the only person up here qualified to be commander-in-chief based on military background. I thought, he's right about that. Why isn't he pressing that message? If he did, it didn't matter to voters, or he didn't do it well enough?
Well, no, I think you're right. I think he didn't have a very good debate performance, and because you know, he was a senator and he was Navy Secretary under Reagan, et cetera, but he doesn't have a lot of name recognition, particularly relative to someone like Hillary Clinton, who comes with her own national security credentials. So the debate was really sort of the first and last chance his campaign had to gain some traction and to establish that he, too, has these national security credentials, because he doesn't have that name recognition, and he really didn't use it. He really didn't highlight that military experience. Now, he would say that he didn't get a lot of speaking time, and that's why he had trouble doing that. But I think you're right to note that he seemed very uncomfortable, and this is one of the things he's even said himself, is that he hasn't been very comfortable in politics in general. He actually resigned as Reagan's Navy Secretary over budget cuts to the Navy, and he also only served one term in Congress because he just really wasn't comfortable with the politics, with sort of, I think he called it clubby or clicky, and thought that they weren't doing a lot of good sort of for the people and moving past the spin. So he is not necessarily comfortable in politics, even if he has this experience. And I think that that's the struggle that we saw during the debate, that we saw throughout the entirety of his campaign. So I anticipate that we won't see him stay in much longer as an independent either.
If he's got a record of being uncomfortable in politics, why would he run for president?
Well, I think he felt strongly that his background was needed, particularly at a time like this, when we see so many national security threats, when we see sort of this spate of global crises around the world, that someone with that military background and with that defense background needed to run. So I think he felt motivated in that way. I also think he, in his mind, and he's spoken to this, that he represents a sort of category of Democrat that no longer exists. He framed it as a fighting Democrat. Mm. He's gotten into some controversy in the past with this, sort of going too far as well. But a sort of, a white, blue-collar Democratic voter, and we don't see that that's not necessarily the strongest base for the Democratic Party anymore. So he saw himself as having the credentials for what was needed, as representing a sort of Democratic voice that he didn't see as being represented any longer, but there wasn't a big base for him to draw from, especially given that he lacked that name recognition in order to make his campaign viable.
We're speaking with Molly O'Toole, politics reporter at Defense One. We're talking about Jim Webb dropping out of the Democratic presidential race. For somebody like Mr. Webb, was this his only shot, 2016, or might he be setting up for 2020, perhaps?
No, I don't think we'll see him again in presidential politics. It would be interesting to see if in the future he might be interested in another run. Virginia is obviously a sort of a unique state. Not quite a swing state, but almost, or if he might be considered, for posts, for some sort of military post like he held before. But I think that's the capacity we'd see Jim Webb in, but not in another presidential election.
Any idea, say, based on fundraising, who might be next to drop out of that Democratic race? Are we looking at O'Malley, for example?
I recently had this conversation. I lost the bet because I thought that Lincoln Chafee, the former Rhode Island governor, would drop out before Jim Webb. So it appears as if they have swapped. I think we might see Chafee next. I mean, they're really struggling to get any sort of money, any sort of traction, and I think that we'll probably see a few more dropouts soon.
Thanks, Molly. Molly O'Toole, politics reporter at Defense One. It is 19 minutes now before the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, we know that when we hear people speak with an accent that's different than our own, it can be a bit of a turn-on. A charming British accent, for example, is often considered sexy to Americans. But what type of American accent is considered sexy to British people? In a new survey, British Airways asked 1,000 travelers to listen to different American accents and rank them on their level of sexiness. The airline played clips from major metro regions, including San Francisco, Chicago, Miami, and Atlanta, as well as tracks featuring major American celebrities. And, for some reason, New Yorkers were voted to have the sexiest regional accent in the U.S., beating out the Southern accent in an upset. Also among the findings, those speaking with a Boston accent were said to sound the most intelligent, according to the survey. Huh. Dixie still does have its charm, however. Morgan Freeman and Dolly Parton, both from Tennessee, and Reese Witherspoon from Louisiana were voted the top three sexiest celebrity accents.
Hmm. All right.
Now, I think a lot of this it depends on who the person is that's saying it. Now, I guess they didn't show people pictures of these people who were speaking this, but I think it definitely adds a little something to it if the person that's speaking in this accent is attractive as well.
Or naked.
Yeah, right. And to that point, like, for instance, Leonardo DiCaprio and Margot Robbie from The Wolf of Wall Street, both doing Long Island accents. A little bit different when they're speaking the accent than, like, the guy who's sitting next to you with a Jets game. For example.
Right, who's not an attractive man.
Right. So I think that plays just a little bit into it, again, even though they didn't do that when they play these for them.
So to that point, on my iPhone, my Siri uses an Australian accent.
That's the prompt
I chose.
That's a good one.
I like that one.
I think a lot of Americans, I think, would say the Australian is probably up there, one of their favorites.
Elle McPherson.
Right.
Do we need to say any more?
We do not.
The conversation ends there.
And we move on. And Gordon, Beast Mode is now on the menu at Starbucks. Seattle Seahawks running back Marshawn Lynch teamed up with the Seattle-based coffee company to craft a limited edition drink, which, of course, was dubbed Beast Mode. It's a double mocha frappuccino with mint cream and protein powder, topped with whipped cream, purple berry drizzle, and matcha. I don't even know what that is. The collaboration is for a good cause. Starbucks will donate up to $100,000 to Lynch's foundation via the 24 cents donated per drink sold in stores in Washington State and Oakland, California. The company will also kickstart the campaign with an initial $24,000 donation. The limited edition drink will reportedly be available starting tomorrow through the end of the NFL season. That is like that's a meal and a half. That's not considered coffee to me. I'm not a gourmet coffee guy, but that doesn't feel like coffee to me.
Double mocha frappuccino with mint cream protein powder. Wow. The purple berry drizzle sounds good, but the rest of it sounds like just dessert in a cup.
Yeah,
right?
I can't even imagine. I'd have to take a nap, I think, after drinking that. No beast mode for me, for sure.
Thank you, Mike. It's 12 minutes now before the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Do you want to learn how to mask your identity to browse inappropriate websites and stream media while at the office?
Well, we can't help you with that. But among the many IT problems we solve, Barracuda's web security solutions keep online activity clean and ensure internet bandwidth performance. Reclaim your network, like 150,000 other businesses already have. To learn more about preventing web-based threats, visit barracuda.com/web.
Thanks for being with us. 9 minutes now before the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, Russia and the U.S. have signed an agreement that regulates all aircraft and drone flights over Syria. Pentagon Press Secretary Peter Cook says the agreement establishes safety protocols requiring the Russians and the U.S.-led international coalition to maintain professional airmanship at all times.
This is something both sides have agreed to as a backup in the event that there's a problem with communication in the air.
Meanwhile, Syrian state media say President Bashar al-Assad met Russian President Vladimir Putin in Moscow in the first known trip abroad for the embattled leader since the war broke out in his country in 2011. Vice President Joe Biden says he supported carrying out the operation that killed Osama bin Laden, a change from previous accounts. In 2012, Biden said he told the president not to go, but yesterday he said he told President Obama privately to proceed.
So as we walked out of the room and walked upstairs, I told him my opinion, that I thought he should go, but follow his own instincts.
As Biden considers running for president, accounts depicting him as hesitant to attack bin Laden have been seen as a political liability. Hillary Clinton, who was Secretary of State at the time, has said publicly she supported the raid. Despite billions of extra dollars poured into the Department of Veterans Affairs in the last year and numerous reforms intended to improve veterans' access to care, internal documents obtained by CNN reveal some VA facilities continue to grapple with appointment wait times of months or more, even at the Phoenix VA Medical Center, where veterans were reportedly dying waiting for care. The wait is still between 3 and 6 months for some. It's Back to the Future Day, the day the characters in the movie famously journeyed from 1985 to 2015 in the sci-fi film trilogy's second installment in 1989. If you're looking for ways to celebrate, here are a few. Watch all three Back to the Future movies for free on Amazon Prime. Play some video games. Ride a hoverboard, drink a Pepsi Perfect, or watch the Cubs in the playoffs. In Back to the Future Part 2, the Cubs win the 2015 World Series.
Uh-oh. Whoa, 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 whoa. Slow down with that. They're 3-0 hole right now to the Mets.
It seems rather unlikely, but it is kind of amazing that this movie predicted that back then.
Yeah,
they're pretty close.
It is kind of weird. It is kind of weird. Are you doing anything with regards to the Back to the Future Day today?
I'm going to ride a hoverboard this afternoon.
You are?
Yeah.
In a nearby hoverboard park?
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
And drink a Pepsi.
A sponsor's dream. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Much of Illinois is caught up in flying W flags as the Chicago Cubs make a run for their first World Series title in more than a century. The team isn't used to winning, so you can understand the enthusiasm. Still, the Cubs struggled again last night, losing Game 3 to the Mets to reach the brink of elimination from the playoffs. If the Cubs don't win tonight, they're gone. However, the Wall Street Journal says stores can't keep the W flag in stock. Fans are hanging them from high-rise apartment windows, office cubicles, and flagpoles. Hashtag FlyTheW is trending on Twitter. Little history. The flags date back to the late 1930s, when the team played only day games that often ended as Chicagoans headed home from work. The Cubs started to raise a W or L above the center field scoreboard to alert riders on the nearby L train line of the result. Part of the problem, though, could be with that so many fans are now embracing the flag for the first time. W's can be found hanging in neighborhoods even at game time. Okay, that's a no-no. They're only supposed to be flown once the game is over. You could be jinxing yourselves. I'm trying to be fair here, all right? That's coming from a Mets fan. Could be over today for Chicago. Get those flags right, pronto. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning. Hey, thanks for listening. If you love our show, we'd love it if you took a few minutes to give us a review on iTunes. And while you're at it, make sure you like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter with the handle @ThisMorningShow.